CliffCentral.com.
That's right. No more bullshit. Let's go.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Yes, it's good morning. Monday, another week, and the last month of the year from tomorrow. Very exciting. Very, very exciting.
Should we ever re-record this song?
What, this song?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to keep it the same until I'm dead.
Okay.
There's a dude who wrote this for us.
Okay.
Are you bored with it?
Not that I'm bored, but you know, it's been... six years with the same song?
Almost 7 years. It'll be 7 years in May of next year that we will have had this song playing non-stop. No, I like it. It's kind of our thing now, you know? You know how you develop a thing, and then that's your thing.
Damn it. Now it's only so early, and I'm already pulling a bit of a Mbulelo. What's it called? Pavlov effect?
Pavlov's dog, yeah. Well, you know, when you hear that music, you're like, oh, shit, I got to be working. I got to start the show.
That's what it does, yeah.
Well, our marvelous audience are already giving me shit this morning, which I love. You know that happens. Well, I mean, here's Louis. He says, only 7 minutes late. So proud of you. Justice says, morning, guys. And everybody else climbing in. Louis says, at the same time as complaining about us, he does say the show cannot start without that song. You must never change it. And I agree. Connor says, goeiemôre, mense. And, morning, everybody. Leanne Mull couldn't be with us right at the start of the show, so she sent this picture of herself on another Zoom call at the moment. There she is.
No.
There's Leanne Mull just getting ready for the show. She'll be with us in a minute.
She did slightly oversleep, but she's getting in, getting on.
I've decided.
The queen looks good.
The queen, you know, how old is she now? 92 or 93 or something?
I think 94.
Jesus.
I saw pictures of her last week, horse riding. Now, horse riding at the best of times is an exhausting effort.
No, she's doing
and
well.
And then you think about having to, she's 94, You have to get on top of that thing, and then it's not like horses are just walking on smooth surfaces.
No,
she's going around that whole estate, and it's a bumpy ride.
Yeah, but she's not cantering and galloping. She's just walking and trotting. But I think it's still impressive, you know. It's very impressive. 94-year-old Queen Elizabeth II. And, you know, I was thinking about her the other day because I suddenly thought that this is a woman who's, you know how we change governments all over the world, and, you know, she was there to see what happened in South Africa in 94. And if you watch the latest season of The Crown, which I said I haven't really enjoyed, only Margaret Thatcher has been, I thought, you know, Gillian Anderson did that really well. But the rest of it's okay. Mm-hmm. There's one episode, though, where they focus in South Africa and the sanctions that the British government and the rest of the Commonwealth brought against the South African government during apartheid. And the Queen was very much for that. She said we should have sanctions against South Africa, and Margaret Thatcher was not. And there was a bit of a fight between the two. Hey, Leanne Mull.
Oh, hello. How is everyone?
We're good this morning.
How are you is the most important question.
Oh, I had a little lion, you know.
Yeah, but that's all right. It happens from time to time. Yeah, I know.
Not every now and then. No, I don't know. You know, sometimes you snooze your alarm and then you just don't wake up again.
Yeah, your alarm even gives up on you.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking I'm going to decorate my study
Christmas. Sorry, Gareth. Please finish your point.
So the Queen was very she was very upset with Margaret Thatcher because the rest of the Commonwealth governments, of whom she's the head, all said – South Africa is being very you know, they've got this record of human rights atrocities. The whole apartheid regime is deeply upsetting to the international community. And they said, we're going to put sanctions up against the South African government. And Margaret Thatcher said, no, never. Because she was very pragmatic, and she realized that a lot of the trade, particularly the mining trade, was coming in from South Africa, and it was supporting the British economy. And as a matter of principle, she said no. And they fought and argued about what to call these sanctions for a very long time. But the Queen, she took Margaret Thatcher on, which is something she never did, you know, with anyone before that. And it was quite a big deal. So she was very happy when South Africa became a democratic country in 1994. And that's why she came to visit here in 1995. Straight away, the year after, she was here. It was very important for her, and she was good friends with Nelson Mandela. She had a lot of deep and abiding love for South Africa through the course of the Commonwealth, even through the course of the apartheid regime, where she didn't like the government, but she loved the people, and she made it clear that she was very much against what was going on in South Africa before 1994. So when she did her speech at 21 years old, she made it from Cape Town, where she promised that she would, you know, when she took over as queen one day, she'd include the family of nations all over the world and blah, blah, blah. So the Queen always been a big fan of South Africa.
So I asked this of a friend of mine who's watched The Crown, and they're one of these people who, they never want to ruin anything for anyone. So no spoilers, you just need to get into it. Is The Crown very accurate historically, or do they dramatize certain things? Are they, you know, have they taken artistic license with some
things? It's one of those shows where they've said it's based on real events. So you don't know. None of us can know for sure what the conversations between, you know, the Queen and Prince Philip or Margaret Thatcher and the Queen were. So they have to make that up. And they obviously have made it more dramatic than it might have been.
Okay.
We'll never get a comment from the Queen about what she thinks of it. She'll never say what she thinks. We don't even know if she's watched it, but I'm pretty sure she would have, considering how much attention it's getting at the moment.
Doesn't she have to sign off on things like this, or
no? This is just it's basically drama. They've written scripts. Mm. There's part of it which you can see that they've copied faithfully historically, you know, like when they have a speech that we've seen in the news, for example, or that's been in the historical archives, you can see it. But there's interesting stuff that they've dug up. There's one episode where Margaret discovers that they have two intellectually disabled cousins on their mother's side. And it's I didn't know about this until I saw the episode of The Crown, but it turns out that is true. There were two very mentally disabled cousins of the Queen and Margaret. The Queen and Margaret. Yeah, mentally disabled. They were in a home, and they'd pretty much been written off as dead, but they discovered they were still alive, and one of them only died in, oh man, I think the 1990s or something. So it was quite something. It must have been, it's the first time I've heard of that story, and, you know, I've been following kind of British history for a long time, so I know a little bit about that. I didn't know a damn thing about that story. And what it's got me back onto is watching old interviews of Margaret Thatcher, because what she did was essentially stop Britain from going into decline, and she put it back on a road to success. The airline industry, which she helped revive in Britain, a lot of their inventions and innovations, and the City of London, which is a financial hub, she put back on the right track. Because really, Britain was struggling in the 80s, 70s and 60s especially. But in the 80s, she picked it up and she fixed it. She took the trade unions on and beat them. She was returned as Prime Minister three times, which hasn't happened since. It only happened, I think, once before with Winston Churchill. So she's going to go down in history, whether people liked her or not, and a lot of people didn't like her politics because she was conservative. Margaret Thatcher will go down in history as one of the greatest British prime ministers. And, of course, they didn't make a fuss of her because she wasn't a leftist, so all the feminists didn't like her. But she was probably a stronger symbol for female power in the 1980s than anyone else in the world. She was the most powerful woman in the world in the 1980s.
And then I'm just going to say this, even though it's an uncomfortable thought. I'm glad the Queen didn't die this year. My goodness, please, no.
Well, listen, we've still got December.
Yes, I know we still have a month, but I'm glad she didn't because, like, I think we need the pomp and ceremony and the big hoot of a funeral.
Leanne, if you're wondering why we're talking about the Queen, when you were a bit late this morning, I said, oh, no, Leanne's just getting dressed. She's almost ready. There she is. And I put up a picture of the Queen.
Oh, goodness.
Hey,
okay, we still have a month to go.
So I was just starting to say that I think I'll decorate the study for Christmas so we at least have some Christmas feeling on the show in the morning. I'll get a little tree with some lights or something, and I'll move things around here so that it looks a little more festive. And I think we should all try and do something.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Yes, it is. I see lots of my friends. I've got a pair of friends in Canada. They live in Calgary, in Alberta, and they're decorating their tree already. They've put their tree up, but then they're basically going to hibernation for December, January, February. It's so cold in Calgary. It's not cold enough. Everybody thinks of Canada and they think the whole place is just freezing from, you know, January to January. It's not. But Alberta can get, because it's in the Rockies, so it gets pretty chilly there pretty quickly. And I do find, I've often said to you that one of the things I'd really like to do is live in a wooden cabin in the Canadian hinterland, far away from everyone else, hunt for my own meat, and make a fire every night in a huge big stone fireplace. It's a very cozy feeling. So I saw them doing that today and I thought, okay, well, they're going into it before November's even over. Technically, our family's always had a rule that you don't put up your tree before the 12th of December. And you don't.
Why?
Because it's meant to be the 12 days before Christmas and the 12 days after Christmas. On the 12th day of Christmas, da 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 da. That's kind of how it works.
It is a thing.
Do you have specific rules?
No, it just depends on whoever's willing to drag the tree out and put it up.
Yes.
Even if it's in November, it's fine.
I try to stick to that. So I usually on the 12th of December, I'll pull the thing out of the attic or under the stairs or wherever it's stored and put it up. And then the tree and all the decorations go up on like the 12th and they come down again on the 12th of January. Or before the 12th of January. It depends. If I'm sick of it by then, it all comes down.
I just actually thought of the admin of decorating.
No, it's come on, Sia, it's part of the fun.
No, it's fun and it's cute.
You must never be too old and too grumpy to do Christmas decorations. Come on.
No, I'm never that hands on. I'm mincing about when that happens. I'm just around the house somewhere.
Mincing about is a good way of describing your movements, Sia, during that time of year.
But I just think of, you know, when everything is packed, it's always someone hurtful putting it back into the box. So everything, you know, that was once one clear string is now tied all together and the lights all messed about and you have to spend at least a good hour just untangling everything.
So,
actually, I'm not there.
What do you got to do?
Lights on it already.
No, that's not.
What are you so important that you have so much to do that you can't take an hour to untangle the lights in your tree?
I just don't have the patience.
Sia, are you going to be with the family for actual Christmas this year?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So then before you leave for there, you've got to build up some Christmas spirit. So I'm going to start getting the Christmas songs ready for the show. I'm going to put a little tree in here. I'm going to put the big tree downstairs. I'm going to decorate. I'm going to do it now in this next week. Because
I don't have a tree, but I usually decorate the fireplace.
That's cool. That's great. Yeah. And do you put up
lights and everything?
Do you put up an actual sexy Leanne Moll stocking?
I should.
You should put up one of your actual like lacy, sexy.
Hosiery.
Yeah. Do that. That'll attract
all. Well, remember that pantyhose are the ones that like are leggings,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got stockings, which are the ones that come up to above your knee.
Do women still wear stockings?
Yeah, absolutely. Because then you're free of all the extra stuff that goes on around your waist and all the bulkiness.
Hang
so
on.
If they just go up, and then you don't have like the rubbing of the thighs with the stockings and all of that.
Oh, the rubbing of the thighs.
Well, I mean,
by the way, the rubbing of the thighs is an actual Christmas celebration event which Leanne takes part in every year. It's around, what is that, around the 22nd of December? That's the rubbing
23rd,
of,
Gareth.
Ah, the rubbing 23rd. Of the thighs. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's what
I love.
And it's got nothing to do with a turkey.
That's where Leanne gets ready for Christmas by putting on the stockings and doing a symbolic rubbing of the thighs, which attracts Father Christmas's attention.
It's all about getting into the spirit.
You can start a spark with those rubbing of the thighs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be sorting out our Christmas stuff, so we'll properly go into Christmas mode here on the show somewhere around the 12th as well. It's going to be very exciting. Nice. And we're doing shows, I think, pretty much up to the 23rd, 24th, somewhere around there.
Yeah, well, I said it makes no difference to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is how it's been for most people this year because, you know, work and home have kind of amalgamated and there are gray lines everywhere and nothing's in black and white. So, you know, used to, okay, we're going on holiday on this day. Now, who cares? Mrs. Sangweni says, Sia, you will decorate the tree with us this year. Yes.
That's right. Definitely my mother, right?
Yeah, well, if your mother started listening to the show, she's in for some horrifying surprises. Annika says, the Germans have a great tradition, which we get from the Dutch, called Nikolaus. The night of the 4th, we used to place a shoe on the windowsill, and the next morning it is filled with sweets and chocolate from St. Nikolaus. Dirty old bastard putting sweets in an old shoe.
There was a woman the other day while I was doing my grocery shopping, and she was wearing traditional Dutch clogs.
Yeah.
So, like, full wood. Now, firstly, I don't know if you've ever seen or walked in them.
Horrible, I'm
but
sure.
But they make a huge noise.
Make a noise, but they're probably so uncomfortable, right?
So uncomfortable because they don't bend,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And she happened to be in every aisle that I was. So I
cloppity, 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 clop.
My entire shop with what sounded like a herd of cows behind me, following me. It was so weird.
And she was dressed in the whole outfit?
No, she was dressed normally. She just had these wooden clogs.
Jesus. I don't even, where would you buy those? You'd have to buy them in Holland.
Who knows? Probably. I don't know. You know, where I live, people are very artsy or weird.
Yeah.
Well,
I remember we actually made my mother throw hers away. She had received them as a gift from a friend.
And her clogs, you threw them away?
No, she couldn't wear that. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
It was just noisy. They look ugly.
Were they made of wood and they had little painted things on them?
Yeah, and the ones my mother had were like a bright yellow and orange.
Wow.
They were just an eyesore, actually.
Jesus. Well,
this woman's ones were plain wood. They had no painting on them.
So she probably wears them every day.
Yeah.
Wow. That's something to wear. I mean, these days we have comfortable shoes. Why would anyone want to wear clogs? Even if you're, like, really proud of your Dutch heritage, clogs cannot be comfortable to wear. They must be very, very awkward and heavy on the feet compared to, like, sneakers.
And drawing attention.
Yeah, that noise.
From
clippity, clippity, clippity. You've got a pony running behind you. All right. Carl says, I hate Christmas trees. They make so much of a mess and they kill my sinuses. I refuse to get involved. The wife and the kids do it. I am the Grinch. All right, Carl.
Oh, is that like, that must be a real Christmas tree then.
Yeah, I'd love the smell of a real Christmas tree. I've got a fake one because it's just it's so complicated to get a real one. I feel like I should, but, mm-hmm. Oh, man, I'm sort of with Carl there that the mess that a real tree makes is just crazy with all those needles. And you're meant to use, what, a fir tree, or is it a pine tree, or is it a... I'm not even sure. If somebody knows for sure, like, what's the proper Christmas tree? A spruce?
There's a place in Johannesburg, in Craigle Park, where you can buy Christmas trees. And they offer different ones, depending on what's good that year.
Hmm.
We bought one once. And you have to remember, it's like buying a bunch of flowers, because you've just put the stem into
water
or into a dish.
Yeah.
So it starts to stink a bit, you know, like when flowers stink a bit.
That's also why you shouldn't keep it up for too long.
Yeah.
Well, my parents used to use it. We used to have a real Christmas tree, and the one year it was enormous. Now, they've got a thatched roof house, and therefore it's kind of double volume in the sitting room. And we had a tree that, I kid you not, it must have been twice as high as me at least, and maybe some more. One year. It was the most exciting thing. I mean, I was probably, what, 16, 17, or somewhere around there. So I was sort of in that teenage phase where nothing's cool. But I remember looking at this tree thinking, that is spectacular. And to decorate it, we needed one of those painter's ladders that goes, or that extends all the way up. But it was so beautiful. And I remember kids, when they came to visit that year, they were in awe of this tree, because it was so high. It was so impossibly high, and it was decorated right to the top. And they couldn't believe it. Their eyes were popping out of their heads. They were just in absolute stunning and awe. It's just amazing. So that was cool. And the smell of a real tree is beautiful.
Speaking of the Grinch, very quickly, there is this funny trend that has been taking place in the U.S. It's clearly a photo set, or you can book and this photographer comes and takes photos, Christmas-themed photos of you and your family, but particularly your kids. And just imagine a bench in the midst of trees, and it's very beautifully decorated, and your kids go and sit on the bench, and the photographer starts innocently taking photos of your kids and young kids. They're posing there, they're looking very cute.
Sure.
But from the trees, from behind, the Grinch starts creeping up behind the kids. And so the photographer gives you the set of photos and a video of all of this happening. So like in each photo, you see the Grinch getting closer and closer. And then finally the Grinch jumps over the bench and scares the kids. So you also have that photo. I've seen like two photos of it over the past couple of days. Scares the kids shitless, but still worth watching.
I love it. So Carl says, I'm talking about the artificial ones. All that shit falls off and sits there collecting dust for 11 months. Bin the whole idea. And while we're at it, all the short-haired dogs should be put down. Well, Carl, you are such a fun person this morning. I'm so thrilled you're part of the show.
Yes.
Woody says he's going to have a banana tree rather than a Christmas tree. I suppose you could decorate any tree if you wanted to. Connor says, did you know the Nazis tried to replace the star at the top of the Christmas tree with a swastika? Those fucking Nazis. They just wanted to spoil everything, those Nazis. They were like Carl. The Nazis.
Damn it.
That's the only time Father Christmas is mentioned in the German tradition. We believe that Christkindchen, which is an angel, and the other angels bring the gifts, and huge plates, one for each member, filled with traditional German biscuits, etc. So that's Annika's thing when she celebrates Christmas, the Germans. That's the Nikolaus tradition she was telling us about. Thomas says, my sister wrapped all her Christmas presents this weekend, and she carefully wrapped 6 champagne glasses that are our mums for our niece. Unfortunately, the present fell off the table and all 6 priceless champagne glasses were broken as a result. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, that's terrible. Yeah, I've decided that this December I'm just looking forward to taking it super easy and really quietly and being at home, being in the pool, just, you know, doing very dull and quiet things. I'm not looking for big parties, and I'm not looking to go away. That's my plan, and I'm very happy with that for the first time ever. The only night that I'm maybe keen to do something is New Year, and I just don't know what's happening. and whether we'll still be in curfew at that point, because that fucking Nkosazana Zuma, she just can't stop with this state of disaster, hey? I mean, the numbers are just ridiculous at the moment. They're so small. And I'm talking not about the number of infections or people who got sick, because that's going to happen. That's not going to go away anytime soon. I'm talking about the deaths from COVID. And the numbers are tiny, and yet we're still in this lockdown. We're still at level one. It's ridiculous. They just cannot relinquish this power. Government will not give it back to the people. They just won't give us our freedom back. The fact that we still have to stop doing things at midnight, supposedly, it's childish. That's the only way I can describe it. And it better stop before New Year, because what the hell is that going to mean for New Year's Eve?
I raised this up when I thought about it. You know, what are we going to do when you're counting down to midnight?
I think people just ignore the police and the government. They just won't care.
I'm wondering, well, we'll see as the day rolls out today what all of the reports will be coming out of, you know, the U.S. after Thanksgiving weekend. Whether or not people were with their families.
Apparently, a whole lot of people, they absolutely just don't care. And this weekend they were posting pictures of them with their family and saying, fuck you, Andrew Cuomo, and things like that. So I think that's what'll happen.
I've lost my crush on him now.
Cuomo? Never had a crush on him. He's the one with the big nipple ring. Right?
Yeah, the nipple ring.
No.
No, wait a minute. My crush could be...
look up Andrew Cuomo nipple rings. No, seriously, it's gross. He was like wearing this...
Really?
He's this like old man with the... Clearly, he's a kinky fucker. And he's got... these big brown nipples, and he's got these big rings through them, and you could see them through his shirt. And yes, did you see them? Have you found them? Yes.
I'm definitely not proving that.
No,
this
was a big story like a little while ago. By the way, he's the guy who wrote a book about how well he's handled COVID. Meanwhile, he's got the second highest rate of death in his state because he sent all the old people back into the nursing homes after they had COVID, and they spread it everywhere.
Show us the nipples.
It's all from just these types of photos. So you have to squint and look into the nipples for you to see.
He's wearing
so
gross.
Look, I just, you know, I like power.
Yeah, you like power, but that guy is just he's a shithead. He really is. He's going around telling everyone how well New York State handled COVID, but they've got the second highest rate of death in the U.S. from COVID, and it's because his administration and that moron Bill de Blasio, who's the mayor of New York, those two between them, Mutt and Jeff, they ended up killing people. And now he goes and writes a book about how good he is as a governor. Please. All right. Anyway, we've got to move on. We've got some news. Let's look at some of the... You're still laughing at his nipple ring.
He can't get over it.
I think there's something... If you're a grown man and you're over the age of 40 years old and you're wearing nipple rings,
We can maybe even excuse it and say 45.
Who wants to see that? Who is...
Nipple ring...
Who's out there asking...
Pierced ears, I think over 45 should not happen.
Who's asking for a guy in his, what is Cuomo, in his 50s, 60s? Who's asking for him to have his nipple piercings on display? Please, Jesus. All right, here we are. Let's move on.
62.
62, yeah. 62 with my nipple rings, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. Likes that. He probably puts on like a leather gimp mask at night and his wife whips his flabby ass.
I know.
Sorry, if we're talking about creepy men, I know we need to go to the news as well. I don't know how I got stuck into this again, but I was reading up on the 13 women who complained about Bill O'Reilly a few years ago. Bill O'Reilly, you know, from Fox News.
O'Reilly, he was the guy. O'Reilly was the guy who used to call up his producer, and then he'd be playing with himself while he was making her talk to him.
Oh no!
It was. I don't know why I didn't remember the story. Out of these women, there was one black woman
who worked
with him, and he would often call her hot chocolate.
Oh boy!
And she says, you know, That she can put aside, but the fact that he would grunt at her, just a grunt, that's every time he saw, just going down the corridor, going,
abort.
That's revolting.
You know, men are filthy, just a grunt, just walk away.
Poor hot chocolate, I hope she's okay.
You know what I mean?
Poor hot chocolate. All right, news time, it is... it's headline time, and here's Panyaza Lesufi again. He is the whole world couldn't possibly direct its attention more at Panyaza Lesufi, and he'd still not be happy. The guy is just desperate for attention. Obviously, he didn't get any love from his parents when he was little. But he, on Sunday, said at least 40,000 applications for grade 1 and 8 have not been allocated a school for the 2021 academic year. 40,000 kids who are about to start high school or primary school have not been allocated a school. And we want the government to take more control. We want public education to be funded with more of our taxpayer money. Just remind me exactly how good an idea you think that is again. Let's start at the top. When the Gauteng Education Department, that's just for one province in our country, cannot find a school for 40,000 new learners. Education MEC Panyaza Lesufi said out of the 220,000 applications, only 181,000 have been approved. The MEC said 280 schools across the province had already reached capacity. He said the department was facing a challenge of a high number of pupils and not enough classrooms. That is called a lack of planning on your part, Panyaza Lesufi, not a challenge. This is not like, you know, suddenly something's come out of the bushes and frightened the people away from the campsite. That's a challenge. This is you guys not planning adequately.
Yeah, it's something that can be completely predicted.
Sure.
Given previous years, the rate of increase.
Correct.
The population levels.
No, but he's too busy looking for a media opportunity to actually build schools. Anyway, currently he says 280 of our schools are full and there is nothing we can do. Of the 280 schools that are full, 144 are primary schools, 136 are high schools, and are in the following areas. Benoni, Alberton, Johannesburg, South, Lanesia, Roodepoort, Bryanston, and Centurion.
Oh, wow.
Okay. All I can say is, listen, I'm doing my part by not having children. So all the rest of you can take responsibility for this one. I'm not doing anything wrong on this one.
Okay.
The family of Enoch Mpianzi is seeking a 20 million rand settlement from the GDE. Now, you remember that story. The family of the 13-year-old.
Remind us?
Enoch Mpianzi was
the
kid who drowned in January during an unauthorized Parktown Boys high school excursion in the northwest. And the family are at loggerheads with the department after they refused an initial settlement of 10 million. Now looking for 20 million. Because, of course, your heart is less broken at 20 million. Everybody knows this, right? Your heart's very sore at 10 million. But if you can get 20 million, your heart won't be so sore.
Yeah, I've never quite understood it.
I've understood it.
When it comes to,
I've understood it, and I'm not going to be sympathetic to this nonsense anymore. I think people are so careful not to. Obviously, it's a tragedy. This child has unnecessarily died because of negligence, and maybe the department are responsible for part of it. And I would be furious if I were the parents of young Enoch Mpianzi, and I feel sorry for them. I really do. My heart goes out to them and always has. But this is pure errant greed. This is I need money to make me feel better. Mm. Money will make my problems go away. And I'm terribly sorry for both of these parents for the ugliness of having to lose a child in this way. No one should have to go through that suffering. But there is no way that...
No, of course.
There's no way that public money, taxpayers' money, is going to make you feel better. And if it is, then you're not really grieving for your child, are you? You're just looking for a nice lump sum. So... I would fight this if I were the department. I'd say, you know what, you got 10 million on the table. 10 million on the table. There are people who lose their children every day to disease and to hunger and to horrible, horrible
accidents,
depredations, that absolutely accidents. You know, on the way to school, something horrible happens. No one's running to them with 20 million rand every time they lose a child. And if we go down the road where parents end up being rewarded, and I say that in inverted commas because I know it's sensitive, but where you get a lump sum payment for your child.
Compensation.
Yeah. Then we're going to end up with situations where that's incentivized. And don't think that there aren't people who are awful enough to do terrible things to their children in the hope of getting compensation. You got to be careful. This is a very slippery slope you go down. And I'm very sorry, but 10 million seems to me like a department mea culpa that's quite acceptable. I've never lost a child, so I don't know how that feels, but I'm sure it's the worst thing in the world. And 10 million rand.
Don't you wish in cases like these that we had a jury?
I wish in cases like these that we could bring back the child and we could say to the parents, money or the box. I mean, you can have your kid back. I mean, imagine if we could work magic. You can have your child back or 10 million. And then we'll really see the character of some people, because some people will say, you know what, I'd rather take the 10 million. I'm not saying that's the case here, of course. I think that these people are genuinely aggrieved, and rightly so. But I do think that there are probably some terrible people in the world who'll go, no, I'd rather have the money.
Leanne, why would you wish we had a jury in this instance?
I don't like the way the decision is not being put on more shoulders.
So who would be in that jury? Let's say it's 12, like the American juries mostly are. Let's say we get 12 people. Are there going to be 12 people who, 12 parents who also went to the school? Are they going to be 12 people who are in really, really bad financial circumstances? Because those people will say, sure, give the money, because they don't care about where it comes from. They just, you know, they know it's state money. Would it be people who are conscientious with their money and would say, no, 10 million's enough? You see, again, choosing a jury in this country is very complicated because people in this country are so different. And if you have juries in South Africa and these juries have to be the decision makers in a case of commercial law where it's very complicated, it's going to be no use to have a jury. You're going to spend most of your trial, we've already got an enormous backlog of, most of your trial just explaining to people what commercial law is. It's not a good system. Please believe me, not in this country. Very bad idea. Let the judges apply the law.
And if they were questioning or debating how long someone from the Department of Education will be spending in prison, perhaps they feel like, no, 5 years is not enough. We want them to suffer some more. I'd sort of get that, but it's an amount of money.
Yeah.
It makes me go, well, what is that actually going to...
Listen, it's very hard. It's very. I'm glad
but
it's not.
Aren't in the situation.
I'm glad it's not my responsibility, and I'm sorry for this family. I really am. But 10 million rand sounds like a good deal, and if you're going for double that just because you think you could get a chance of having an extra 10 million, I can see what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is interesting. Former SARS commissioner Tom Moyane will be the one asking questions at the state capture inquiry on Monday. Apparently, Moyane will cross-examine Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan. That's going to be fun. We're going to see these two going at each other. Only for a limited time, according to Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, the commission will hear testimony from former SARS employee and partner at Bain, Ethel Williams. How is it that Tom Moyane isn't in jail again? Someone explain that to me. He's the guy who's completely eviscerated SARS. How is it he's not in jail? And how is it that Pravin Gordhan is still in government when every department he's presided over has ended up worse off by the end of his tenure than at the beginning, except for SARS? Someone explain that one to me too, because Pravin was the minister while SAA was falling apart. Pravin was the minister while Eskom was falling apart. Pravin was the Minister of Finance under Jacob Gedleyihle Zuma. Someone explain to me how he gets a clean rap sheet just because he's efficient, when the ideology and the policies he's implemented are terrible. Someone explain that one to me. So I have no dog in this fight. I'm looking forward to Tom Moyane and Pravin Gordhan baring their teeth and their claws and attacking each other. I think it's going to be great entertainment. I'm getting ready with my cup of tea and my blankie in front of the TV. It's going to be so exciting. And there's been a massacre in the jihadist ravaged northeast of Nigeria where 110 people have been killed. There's an insurgency, and it's been taking place for more than 10 years in Nigeria. And it took place on the same day as the long-delayed local elections in that state. In Maiduguri, 110 people were killed in a weekend attack on farm workers in the northeast of Nigeria. It's been blamed on jihadists, the UN humanitarian coordinator in the country said on Sunday, making it the deadliest raid on civilians this year. Now, again, if your government cannot authorize your army, or your army is incapable of going in and sorting out these jihadists, you're not really a country. You're not a country if you can't protect your citizens. You're just a humdrum, badly cobbled together, messy pseudo-state. That's what Nigeria is. Unless you can protect your citizens from violence within the country like this. And this is an argument for the South African government too, by the way, when crime gets out of control. And we're supposedly currently going through 16 days of activism. And if there are women being raped at the rate that they are in South Africa, sometimes someone's got to ask, hang on, is there a government here? Is there a way that the state can protect its own people? And if they can't, are they really a state? So I feel sorry for Nigeria in this situation because they are screwed. They don't know how to take on these Islamists in the northeast of the country. It's getting worse and worse. They've been dealing with it supposedly for 10 years, and it's not going away. So this is the ugly reality of Nigeria in 2020, as if they haven't got enough problems because they've also got coronavirus and everything else to deal with. And then in New Zealand, you know that they have massive health and safety rules in Australia and New Zealand. They've filed charges against 13 parties after last year's deadly White Island disaster. Do you remember that? 22 people died when the country's most active volcano suddenly erupted while there were tourists on it. So 10 parties are now facing charges under the Health and Safety of Work Act, which carries a maximum fine of $1.5 million. A further 3 have been charged as directors or individuals. These people who've been accused of neglecting these rules will face a maximum fine of $300,000. Apparently,
I actually watched a documentary on this.
It was
incredibly tragic, but completely preventable. Definitely.
So it's negligence.
Yeah.
If you want a complete dramatization and just completely sensational piece on this, it's available on YouTube. It's 60 Minutes in Australia that went and they covered this. They took one of the people who was there on that day or something back onto the little boat to the island. And 60 Minutes is meant to be, you know, one of those shows. 60 Minutes, there's carte blanche, you know.
It's credible.
Of credible journalistic standards.
Right.
They're asking questions like, how does it feel now that you're back here? If we go back to that day, what did you feel? And then this girl was saying, yeah, on that day I had a feeling something bad was actually going to happen.
You've used the same.
Being on here.
Just used the same word 4 times, and that's because they probably used it in all those questions, as you just pointed out. And then it's all about someone's feelings. Now, listen to me. That's not news. Okay, your feelings are not news. You say, what happened? Where were you? What do you remember seeing? What did it sound like? What was going on the boat? What did your tour guide say to you? Mm-mm. Did you have a camera on you? Ask questions where the answers will be useful and factual and interesting. I don't give 2 shits what someone on that ship was feeling. That can be a question right at the end.
Now, this woman says,
it's sensational. That's all this is.
I've always been drawn to quite odd things happening in my life.
Oh, God.
I just have a pattern.
Why don't we get a psychic on?
Like,
now, why don't we bring Dionne Warwick on, and she could sit there with a crystal ball and say to them, well, I foresaw the explosion, but I felt it was necessary for these people to learn a life lesson. I mean, this is the kind, this passes for news. these days. This passes for news. What an outrage.
It is just,
yeah, anyone doing any foreseeing should have been the geological association or whatever, and the tourist company.
You know, instead of asking people who survived this White Island disaster, why don't they go to the geological survey people and say to them, how do you do this? How do you measure? How did you know? How did you not tell people? How did you not evacuate people before? If you knew there was going to be... That's interesting. That helps us to plan something more going forward. Someone's feelings are about as useful as a story around a campfire. And that's fine, because those can be entertaining. I get it, but it's not helpful and it's not news. Jesus.
Yeah.
This is what journalism's become. It's all about, how did you feel? Were you crying? Show us the pictures of your kids. Oh, for God's sake. It's like Hausfrau's United. They're all sitting around a table crying with each other. Anyway, let me tell you about something more important that we can help each other out with. This is really cool. I know lots of our listeners run their own businesses, and it's been a horrible year for people in small and medium enterprises. But running an SME is no easy task at the best of times, and this year has made it much tougher to thrive. Marketing budgets have been slashed. That's resulted in less exposure where you really need it the most. Ozo, that's OZOW. You've seen their ads, right, on social media?
Yes.
They're a payment platform.
As in Ozo Easy.
Correct. OZOW. They want to help you and your business to get back in the game. It is your business. Ozo say it's their business too, though, because they want you to succeed. Stand a chance to be one of six companies to get 10 minutes on our show to explain what you do, what your business is all about. You can tell us why your business deserves to be highlighted and given a little leg up and given some media attention. And we'll use the hashtag somebody's business. All right. So use that hashtag somebody's business and send us an email. Tell us on the message board, whatever it is that you want to do. But we want to know all about you and your business. So you can email us. It's your business. Give us an email at contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will put it on in the next 2 weeks. We've only got space for six businesses, but Ozo have come along and they've said, it's not just your business, it's their business too, and we all want you to succeed. So if your business is at a terrible time and you need just 10 minutes of free publicity where you can explain what you do, you can talk to us about your service or your product, we can help everybody else to learn about you, and maybe we connect you to your biggest client. Who knows? This could be the thing that saves your business right at the very end of the year where most people have given up. So we could help you. Along with Ozo, this is our project for the next 2 weeks, and we want you to be part of it, please. Email us, contact@cliffcentral.com, and use the hashtag somebody's business. You can also do it on social media. We'll be putting out those messages today, and we'll gather up all the different businesses. I'd love for us to be able to help you and for Ozo to be able to help you at the end of the year to get your business back on track.
Love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Very nice.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Can you guys hear the singing from my side?
No.
I heard something earlier.
What's going on?
It's your singing neighbor.
It's my singing neighbor, the one with the earphones who has no sense of
what's she singing?
What's going on?
Pardon? Can you hear what song she's singing?
No, it's like this humming whatnot. I just need to, I think during the break I'll just go and have a word with her. It's now horribly distracting. This is after I'm at my wit's end after this weekend, because there's another neighbor of mine who is starting to learn to play the piano. Lord Jesus in heaven.
Oh goodness.
Now if it was someone who already knew how to play the piano and was just, you know, giving us great songs every now and then with their doors open, beautiful, that's fine. But if you're starting to learn to play the piano,
all
you
hear
like
annoying.
The same three keys or over and over and over again, I was ready to just pull my ears off on Saturday.
And you also get the scales. No, 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 no.
Sounds horrible. No, listen, I've told you before about my neighbor who's got a gardener, and the gardener is obsessed with the leaf blower. He's got like a passionate relationship with the leaf blower, and it goes on for at least 2 hours every goddamned afternoon. Every day. For 2 hours, the guy's leaf blowing. I mean, by now, you could probably have made the world's largest compost heap with all the leaves that he must have been blowing around. I think he probably starts wind currents in use of that leaf blower that are causing chaos somewhere.
So necessary.
Imbalance in the world.
I'm telling you, the butterfly effect. Because of that leaf blower, which is on for so long every day, I'm sure they have to replace it every couple of days because it's impossible that any leaf blower ever worked this hard.
The world's starting to tilt with all the heaviness of the leaves.
Now that's bad, but I can only imagine how bad it is to have someone who plays an instrument badly living right next door to you.
No, I've closed the windows now, so I think that should, like, take the sound down.
All right, Mr. Schmangel says, Sia is like the Karin of his complex. Let the damn woman sing, Sia. Who knows? She may be able to get some pelvic action if she sings like that. See?
No. Sorry.
Yes.
No. And I'm not the Karin because I haven't complained officially.
He's just talking about it on the show. Elf says, Sia, come to our church. We will guide you to the Lord. Yes, good. There we go. Carl says, Gareth, the best analogy for explaining how useful something is to say, when it's not useful, it's as useful as a pork chop in Palestine. So, for example, those people's feelings are about as useful as a pork chop in Palestine when you talk about 60 minutes. And Nikita has some advice. Sia, 60 minutes is a terrible show. There is very little independent journalism left. Most investigative shows are just sensationalist and are actually far left platforms.
Well, they've evolved to become that because they're seeing that the others are more popular.
Yeah. Mono Abisi says,
it's disappointing like that, though, I will have to say. You know, I enjoyed shows like that because you think they put so much effort. Like, they literally work on a story for weeks or months for just 7 minutes within that hour. You think because they put in so much effort, it will be better. But now, yeah, the standards are all dropping.
Monwa BC says, with reference to the subject of the first 5 minutes of the show this morning, Prince Harry should distance himself from that wife of his. This is Monwa BC's advice. Now he might be in hot water with Lizzie, and then because of the deal with Netflix, that the same Netflix has done The Crown, Harry must save himself before it's too late. Harry is, I'm afraid it's too late already for Harry. He's gone. He's out of there. You know, that they wouldn't even let him lay a wreath at the Armistice Day memorial. They wouldn't even, the royal family are probably not even talking to him at the moment. So he's out.
I don't think they are either, yeah.
He can go make friends with all the, Meghan Markle's Hollywood
reality
friends.
Reality is hit for him.
Oh, he must be so miserable. Mm. Poor guy. He's gonna end in tragedy. That guy. I'm sorry. It's just not going well for him.
I think they know exactly what they're doing. And even last week, they released. Meghan released an essay around her miscarriage and
what
she suffered a few months ago.
Here we go.
They're playing us. They know what is happening.
Well, I'm not interested, and I'm sure most people aren't. And Ruth says, Gareth, did you see the miraculous escape of Romain Grosjean from the Formula One crash yesterday? I didn't because I don't watch Formula One, but friends of mine were passing it around on a group, the actual video. The guy's car exploded into a fireball, and somehow he got out. I mean, he's got terrible burn marks on his hands, but they pulled him out of the wreckage, and he's okay. He's alive. I don't know how anyone could have survived that if you saw the accident. Really incredible.
Mm-mm. I missed that over the weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Scary stuff, man.
All right. Okay. Connor says, it's so ironic. Harry and Meghan wanted privacy, but I keep getting news from them about them. Yeah, that's very good. All right, very good. We got to get to the rest of the show. It's 7 o'clock. This is cliffcentral.com, and we are here to look after you this morning, keep you company, and take your thoughts and calls and ideas. You can get hold of us on 0797482090. Tell us what's on your mind this morning. We would love to hear from you. And you can also give us drop us a message if you'd like on the Webinar Jam, which is the live software that we use to do the show, in case you're watching us instead of listening to us this morning. All of that and the podcast, which will be available a little bit later at cliffcentral.com. Just follow the links on the main page. Good morning, everybody.
Cliffcentral.com.